Hey, ¿qué pasa, Calexico? Welcome back to the podcast. Today we're here in a place that many of us have probably driven by. I've driven by here like 1,000 times back, even thinking back to when I was an IVC student. And then now somebody lives in Calexico and goes to Costco, goes to Lowe's, or goes to Imperial. We drive by here often. Today we're here at the Pioneers Museum with Kaylin Suarez, the director of the museum. Thank you for having me over and, you know, sharing, you know, everything about the museum.
Yeah.
Before we get into the museum, tell us a little bit about yourself. Don't tell me too much because, like I said, I want to do another episode where it's just you because, you know, you're coming out down here to the valley from somewhere else. But, yeah, you know, you bring a lot of experience and kind of want to do a longer episode about you, but tell us a little bit about who you are and how you got here and, you know, your role here at the museum.
Definitely. So my husband and I, we moved to El Centro in August of last year. My husband accepted a position to teach Chicano studies at IVC. And I taught a couple of classes in art history over there, as well as I was working remotely with some Texas institutions. My background, actually, I started my career as a French teacher. So my first master's degree is in French studies. I did a master's program in Canterbury, England with the University of Kent. And then it was a year abroad, a semester in Canterbury and a year in Paris. So after that experience, I started my higher education career teaching French, teaching beginning and intermediate French at Lamar University in Beaumont. And Beaumont is my hometown. I'm from Beaumont, Texas. Beaumont's claim to fame is Spindletop, striking oil. So big oil, gas, petrochemical industry back in my hometown. So I built my career in higher education there. I met my husband. He was teaching history at Lamar University where I was teaching French, fell in love. During that time, I had gone back to school actually for an art history degree, because I, you know, after I graduated with my French degree, I didn't really want to teach French. I loved it. It was an amazing experience, but I really wanted to work in a museum. I wanted to write books. I wanted to work in a museum. I wanted to do research. I wanted to do education programs, event planning. I wanted to do it all. And so, along the way during my French teaching career, I was doing a lot of side gigs, and doing a lot of volunteer work at local arts institutions, and fundraising and things like that. And so I was really wanting to gain this skill set that would make me a competitive candidate for museum careers that I was applying for. So I went back to school for a second master's in art history. My husband and I, he really wanted to move back to California. And so that's when we started the job search for jobs in California to be closer to our family here. And, we truly feel like we've been sent to the Imperial Valley. It's been such a blessing. And it's been such a warm welcome from the community holistically. So in November of last year, I was a little bit caught up on my work. Because as you can imagine, you know, moving in August to the Valley, and then, you know, immediately starting school and having to teach three classes and manage my online work and all of that. Around November, I was like, all right, my full-time contract's ending. I need a job. City of Imperial jobs. And the museum director position at Pioneers was open, and I hadn't had a chance to visit here, even though I'd kind of, like you, I'd seen it. I'd seen the Holly Sugar sign outside. I was like, man, you know, like, what's going on over there? And so I turned in my application in person immediately. I didn't tell them what I was there for. I was very transparent, and it ended up just working out that I got the interview, I got a follow-up interview, and then immediately I had a chance to tour the facilities, accept the position, and I started January 3rd. Like, you know, I would have started the 2nd if I could.
Yeah, I remember seeing you on, I think it was the Calexico Chronicle, somebody wrote a story about, you know, you getting hired, and then I think right after that you started following me, and I'm like, who is this? And then I looked into your Instagram, and then I was like, I put 2 and 2, and I was like, oh, okay, she's the new director. And then that's when before, you know, I had reached out to Ocotillo, to the museum with her, and I interviewed them, but I had never, you know, known anybody that was in charge here. So like I had, and because like you said, like we always pass by, and then the Holly Sugar sign is something that we all remember, like going to Raleigh, and it's, you know, it was, did is, was it originally at the sugar thingy that's the.
I think so. I see. I'm not from here. I just know. And we're, you know, it's interesting about the historic signs. Like we're working to restore Ryerson concrete thermometer sign. We, you know, we get questions about all these different signs because they're landmarks to the locals here. So I think now I don't want to say for sure that's where it was, but it, you know, we recently, I think, came across that like in the mid 90s that, you know, we started setting it up. We might have to fact check that, but you know, it wasn't originally here. It was originally at the Holly Sugar plant, and would have been donated to us.
Yeah. Cause you know, that's something that, cause we, people that go to Raleigh, or if you go to the hospital, a lot of people take, you know, 86 and you would drive and we see that sign there. So now that we see it here, it's like, you know, hey, wasn't that sign over there before?
Yeah.
So I mean, there's a lot of things, especially outside, that, you know, we drive by and we see, I'm like, oh, you know, I wonder why it's there. You know, maybe I should stop by it and figure out. But I mean, inside there's a lot more stuff going on.
Oh yeah.
You know, right now we have this backdrop that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, right. It's touching on the regional landscape. And so there's even a mural painted behind there. This kind of actually, you know, this could be at the foot of the Coyote Mountains by our friends in Ocotillo, but it's trying to capture the natural foliage, you know, flora, fauna of, the Imperial Valley. So there's different examples of animals you might find here. There's a roadrunner over there. There's several different owls, of course, our wildcats. You see lots of desert colors in the mural, and then mountains in the background. You know, this is actually our school tours often start here because the children really, really love, just looking at all the different animals. And you know, and talking and asking questions. And so it's always, you know, one of the favorite exhibitions for entering the museum.
Do you know who all these animals were? They found, or somebody?
Yeah, no, they were ethically, you know, we have all the wildlife permits, you know, fish and game, don't come after me, please. No, they were, I believe they were donated to us by a taxidermist, locally. And it was a collection that's happened over the years. And so every now and then, you know, I know some of the protected animals, usually they start off as roadkill, and then the taxidermist is able to bring them back to life, and we're donated that way. But I want to say that this is one of the earliest exhibitions. We've had this for, you know, 30 years.
Yeah. You mentioned roadkill. One of my coworkers, he commuted from Yuma, and he already retired. But I remember one time he's like, come here, come into my office. I'm like, well, what's up? He opened this trash bag, and he had one of those, and it looked like it was alive because, I mean, a lot of times,
lion?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because a lot of times we see roadkill, and like, obviously, you know, they've been ran over a couple of times, but a lot of times they're able to get off the road and, you know, maybe like, you know, they're not too badly damaged when they get hit. Because that one looked like it was like,
still alive.
Yeah. Because his eyes were open, and I was like, what the heck are you doing with that thing?
Yeah.
So, you know, I saw that. It was like, you know, reminded me of that one time my friend brought one of those to work. He had it in the trash. I was like, what are you doing with it?
Well, you know, I'm from Texas, and I come from a family that was like a hunting family, and, you know, going to the deer lease, like during, you know, deer season in November when it opened up. And, you know, so for me, like, you know, I grew up with all sorts of stuffed animals, and the hunting culture there, you know, like people would go to Africa and people would get game trophies and all that. So it's interesting here in California because there's a lot of laws that protect against taxidermied animals and things like that. And so not to say it's a bad thing, but it's just, you know, thinking about what I grew up with and like, oh yeah, you know, of course people did that all the time. Like it was a hobby, like, you know, to be a taxidermist, like.
yeah, exactly. Like having your garage full of, you know, like different, you know, trophies around.
God, yeah.
So you mentioned that there's like 100,000 artifacts, more or less?
So we were trying to do a count. So maybe 100,000 is a little bit of an exaggeration. So we have like 30,000 photos, I think 20,000 documents, several thousand books. So I think we're maybe closer to 50, 55, 60,000 individual objects, photos, documents. And then we're about a 50,000 square foot facility.
Mm-hmm. Some of these items, you know, behind you are pianos. What are those, you know, where are they from?
A lot of them are part of... they were part of historic churches. Oh, okay. So some churches in El Centro are donated. The pipe organ has been graciously donated. And there's actually currently funds being raised for its restoration. So it works, but the diagnosis is like the music box behind it needs some... needs some work on it, basically. And so that is something that, like, you know, part of it is like, yes, about once a year we have somebody come and they play the organ. I think usually it's during our holiday tour, but we're also seeking ways to you know, restore it to its fullest potential so that we can get the best sound out of it. This room, you know, it's, and, you know, we have the pianos in here, but we actually, with IVC on Monday nights, the master chorale comes and they use this as their rehearsal space. And so we have a baby grand piano over there, that they pull out, and then they pull out a bunch of chairs. And the master chorale, it's an IVC class, but it's also a community, a choir. So like there's other members throughout the Imperial Valley community that sing with the master chorale students. So, you know, we have the pianos on display, but then we also, you know, actively have groups that use this room as a music room.
Okay. No, that's interesting. That's, you know, that's good that you guys are able to, you know, work with IVC, especially like it being across.
Oh yeah. I walked to work. Get my extra steps in.
How many, what do you call them? Exhibits or
displays? Exhibits. I would say around 30-ish. So like in this room that we're in right now, we call this the map room because behind you, we have this huge map of the Colorado River watershed, that kind of shows, the story about how, you know, they got water to the desert. The Imperial Irrigation District, is kind of in charge of informing the narrative of that display. Beyond that, we have the Cattlemen's Gallery. So a lot of the local cattlemen, historically, those families contributed to that exhibition. The pianos. We have our ethnic galleries. So I want to say there's 14, 15 different ethnic groups that are represented. And these were people who came to the Valley, who came for opportunity, basically, whether it was to farm the land or whether it was to start a bunch of businesses, grocers, things of that nature. Well, I'm thinking like the Chinese Americans, when they did come over from Chicali, they were, you know, owning grocery stores. They were providing that service to the communities. Some came explicitly to be farmers, the Japanese Americans. They were the first to farm lettuce in the Valley. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's a staple. Like we're known as the, you know, nation's winter garden. And so it's a really fascinating story that's being told of the different ethnic groups which founded the Imperial County. Upstairs, we have an agricultural gallery that's kind of chronological, and it's considering the development of agriculture here. And it's an interest, you know, obviously the story of bringing water here and the story of agriculture are really linked because, you know, the obvious thing is you need water to grow crops, mm-hmm. but also thinking about the labor force and the workforce. And so upstairs, one of my favorite objects, and it's so random, it's a Fresno scraper. And a Fresno scraper is used to help, you know, trench and build, you know, little canals for your farms. And so, you know, if you think about it, these early farmers, they're coming, they're, you know, they don't have water on a mass scale until the Imperial Irrigation District, right, does that, facilitates that. But all of the tools and all of the workforce, they were all agricultural workforce that built those trenches, that built, that brought the irrigation here. And so thinking about that, I think that's really, you know, like that, like a huge engineering project like that, who was the backbone of that? It was the farmers. We have our agricultural galleries. We also have a law enforcement gallery that honors local law enforcement. We have, and then we also have like these displays. Like we have a collection of saddles on display, a huge collection of photography equipment and cameras and stuff on display. Like we have really old cameras, so that we always have photography enthusiasts that are like, wow, you have this and you have that. And it's like, yeah. We also have, a huge display of furniture and objects, the material culture of those early pioneers, things like quilts, beds, music boxes, early, instruments. Like I'm thinking like, upstairs we have different collections of like violins and things like that. But even down here in our Swiss gallery, they have clarinets. They have these huge cowbells, like huge, because back in Switzerland, right, they had the huge mountains. And so the cows, I had to have a little weight to it, right? So yeah. The other cows could hear the lead cow. So, I'm running through the list of everything. There's a Boy Scout gallery. There's a Girl Scout gallery. There's, a gallery that honors the early medical, practices here. There's a lot of civic oriented galleries. So we have, displays, that show the different senior high school classes of the area high schools. Mm-hmm. And so, you might be able to go and look up, Brawley Union High School class of 1962 or whatever class it is that you're looking for, and see those high school pictures hanging up.
You're making me feel guilty because
the joke here, right? Everybody's and you mentioned it earlier, that we're the Valley's best kept secret. It's like, we don't want to be a secret. We want to be the Louvre. Like that's how I'm marketing, right? Like I lived in France for a year. I visited the Louvre like 6 times. Oh. I didn't even scratch the surface of everything that could be seen at the Louvre. And that's how I feel here. I live here, I work here. Uh-huh. This is my, I'm here almost every day and I'm barely even scratching the surface of, exploring and, learning from everything that we have on display here.
Yeah, and I kind of messed up because I should have walked around before.
No, you're fine.
Because you're mentioning all these things. Like, what, you have all these things? Especially I didn't even know there was a second floor. So it's mind blowing that there's so many things in here that like I said, we drive by every day. Mm-hmm. Well, not every day, but maybe some people, but others, a couple times a week, and we mm-hmm. you don't even know the history and the cool stuff that, like, for instance, you mentioned the first picker, the
Fresno scraper,
but who were the first
to grow lettuce, the Japanese Americans.
And now I don't think you see any Japanese Americans picking lettuce anymore. So,
well, I mean, there's still an active Japanese American community here in Imperial Valley. Mm. They, our ethnic displays, we have gallery chairs that a lot of times they're descended from the original pioneers. So like the Japanese American gallery, they're very active in Imperial County. I want to say they do stuff with the Honey Festival in Westmoreland. They sponsor a scholarship for IVC students. One of my students was asking me, she's like, do you know about this Japanese American scholarship? I was like, no, I had no idea. And, looked into it. And so it's like, there's still, a lot of people do move off, that's how life happens, but there are still the descendants of the original folks that were growing and picking lettuce, right? That are still living here in the Valley and who are still supporting, like they're supporting the museum and they're supporting the next generation learning about, the past.
Yeah. Something that you before we started recording, you also say Chicali a lot.
Yeah.
Even though it's, is it because of your students?
Chicali. Like, it sounds cool. It's easy. Like, and then my accent, like I said, Mexicali.
Chicali is fine. Yeah. It's just, I find it funny that you, when you talk about Mexicali, it's like, oh yeah, Chicali. It's like, oh, you know, it's.
Yeah, no, you know, you, and you see it on shirts. Mm-hmm. You mentioned, you know, we were talking about marketing a little bit earlier. Like I, you know, I'm a millennial. Like I've had a phone in my pocket since I was 14. And so I love, you know, I love Instagram. I wrote those press releases. So like I have, you know, this marketing and public relations. That was kind of one of my side gigs, like journalism, public relations, marketing. And so I try to be like conscious, okay, like how, you know, how are the locals referring to things? Like how are, you know, what's the mindset? You know, I see students that come to my class and like they have like a Chicali Way shirt on, you know, and it's like, okay, cool. Like, you know, they're not calling it Mexicali. They're not like, oh, I'm from Mexicali. Like I don't think any of my students have ever told me that. Now, of course, like some of the, you know, like, the woman I'm working with on the translations, like she said Mexicali, you know, but no, my students, like, you know, people my age, like, you know, my students are, you know, their ages, they range. I'm 30, you know, their age ranges all over at a community college, which is really like one of the things I love about community colleges is like, we're all adults there, you know, I don't need to discipline anybody. We're all there, you know, to learn from each other. With Chicali, you know, like I see a lot of like brands that use that, or like t-shirts, kind of, and then just hearing my students telling me where they're from. I'm very like, I like paying attention to marketing. I like paying attention to, you know, like how are the locals talking and speaking?
And I think that's a huge tool when it comes to promoting, you know, a place like this where, wanted to ask you, what would you say is the, like the average age of visitors, you know, people that come in here, what would you say it's like the average age?
So, we have all ages that come and visit. And so like we do our big events, which draw in like a very wide crowd, like that's a family crowd. But then we also, something that's a culture that's new to me is snowbird culture. All of these folks that come from Oregon or, you know, Northern California or Washington State or Canada, coming down here and like, living here 6 months out of the year. We have a really diverse visitors just because they're coming from all over because they're staying in the Imperial Valley, for the weather during that time. Students, we cater, we have a fifth grade tour that that brings in a lot of fifth graders, but we also, just thinking about the different tours that we have coming up. We're working with a group of special education students on a tour. We're working with a group, like a homeschool cohort, co-op on a tour. So they're going to be age ranges from 5th to 12th grade. So, we get everybody. I think my volunteer force, they are, you know, ages range, but we do have a lot of people that are retired in their 60s, 70s, 80s. Mm-hmm. And, but it's amazing to me because, you know, my grandmother's 84 and she's hard. Like she does not have the energy. Like the folks that are around me that come here, like they're running, like, you know, when I first started here, like people were running circles around me and it's like, man, you're 78 years old. You're running circles around me. And so, you know, like I think that's the perception here is that it's a lot of old people and that's not true. Cause even like, are, you know, people that you might think, oh, they're old people. Like, no, they're not. Like their spirit is really young. And they have this energy and they're super inspiring that, you know, me and my colleagues, like we're both, you know, in our 30s, we're like, man, like we got to keep up with them. But no, I would say our visitors, it's everyone. Our students, oh man, like this semester I assigned my students our first writing assignment. Like we're practicing visual analysis, and visual analysis is a methodology used in art history that you look at an object for its own sake, right? So like this water bottle, I'm not going to come at you and talk about, oh, water, it's H2O, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to say, all right, this object, it's made out of plastic. It's shaped a little bit like a cylinder. There's a lid on top of it. It has a blue label, right? You're trying to be like as scientific and objective as possible. So for that exercise, I'm having them come here, you know, come to the museum, go to our ethnic galleries, look at some of the examples of art and visual culture that are in those galleries and do a close looking, do a visual analysis. And so the other day I was walking across from teaching my class and I had like three or four students following me. And so like my students are coming here. So that's really exciting to me just to see all the different people that are coming in. I'm really hoping, you know, to inspire, like, so there's so many people that, you know, they're telling me, they're like, oh, I haven't been here since I was in fifth grade or sixth grade. And I forgot a lot of stuff. And, you know, I want to inspire, like, you know, that lifelong curiosity to keep coming back and learn something new. Spend 20 minutes here. Spend 30 minutes here. Yeah. We also are on a public park. So our grounds around us, that's City of Imperial Public Park. So, you know, even if you don't want to go inside the museum, you can still take a walk around the park and just, you know, be out, you know, maybe not in August, right? 120 degrees, but like while the weather's still good, like come out and walk around the park and enjoy the public park.
So this area down on the east side of the building, is that the park or is
no? Yeah, you can walk around. There's a little bit of a walking trail. Okay. And it's all around the facility. Our campus, so you know, we have the main building, but then we also have Estelle Station, which would have been it was a house that was moved here. And in the early days, the engineer working on the railroad or the serviceman working on the railroad, they would live there because, you know, they were close to change the tracks or whatever needed to be done. We also have a blacksmith shop on our campus. We have an outdoor warehouse where we keep a lot of our big equipment, which gets pulled out for Pioneer's Day. And we also have Heber College, which is, we're hoping, you know, actually, you know, I'm going to say we are, you know, like we want to transform Heber College, which is a historic, building that was brought here from Heber, and to the performing arts complex that it once was. It was a beautiful neoclassical building. It had like the neoclassical facade, the grand staircase inside. And we're hoping, you know, we want to do a capital campaign and we want to, bring back the historic Heber College building and work with IVC. Like, hey, you know, like you have students in theater or you have students that are performing. Like, you know, I think there's a need for a stage. Brawley is doing some renovation and restoration on their theater. They have a historic theater in Brawley. And so it's really exciting to see, you know, these performing arts venues being restored because that is such a valuable resource, cultural resource. To have stages and to have places for performance. Mm-hmm.
Hey guys, sorry for the interruption, but I wanted to take this time to thank my sponsors. I want to thank my longtime sponsors, my friend Camilo Garcia, Eddie Lopez from Roots Creative, and my friend Jake. Thank you guys for being longtime sponsors of the podcast. I also want to thank my friends who sponsored the podcast in 2022. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your sponsorship. And if you want to become a sponsor, you can go to anchor.fm/QuePasaCalexico, hit the support button, and you can sponsor the podcast from 99 cents a month to $10 a month. It really helps me a lot to make this podcast better, sound better, look better, and reach out more people by promoting the podcast in social media and other websites. So if you want to become a sponsor, make sure to go to my Anchor page, and I'll leave a link in the description of the show. So thank you so much. And now back to the show. How is the museum here involved with, you know, you mentioned Brawley, you know, restoring their theater. Mm-hmm. How are they involved with, you know, cities in terms of, you know, historical artifacts or buildings or, I don't know, other things that might be, you know, part of the land that, you know, in the future might end up here? Or are you guys involved in making sure that, you know, they're being kept up or not being destroyed?
Yeah. So we're a private museum. And so a lot of our stuff here is donated to us. Mm-hmm. It is donated to us from the community, from people, from former business owners. That's how we got the Holly Sugar sign, or even, funded by those entities. So our museum, we started off as a historical society. In 1928, it was the Imperial County Historical Society. And, you know, the first 50 years of the Historical Society, they met, they were collecting things were donated to them, and there was a demand for a museum space of some capacity. So they started off at the fairgrounds, in one of the buildings in the fairgrounds, and they were there for like 30 years, I think, you know, sometime in the 50s up through the 80s. And then they started a capital campaign to build a building. And so they struck ground, I think, they broke ground in 92. And then the building was officially open in 94, 95. And since then, it's really grown because of donations from the community, donations of time, but also like objects and, you know, like all of the farm equipment that you see around, those would have all been donated by people. Mm-hmm. And so, we are on park, right? So the city does work with us, you know, letting us have our facilities, on the public park. And, you know, we make sure that the facilities stay nice and maintained and stuff like that.
You say, most of the artifacts are, you know, mostly privately donated. What about funding? Like, how do you guys, you know?
We write grants. I mean, really, I think part of our, most of our funding has been through donations. We have been really, really fortunate. Our board, you know, and the function of any board is to use their experience and their connections in order to best uphold the mission of an institution. So our board does that. Our board are experienced professionals throughout different cities in the Valley. I have Hultvillians, I have Brawlians, I have people that, you know, are from El Centro and lived in El Centro, Calexico, you know, from all over. And that they come with that wisdom of, you know, how's best to approach different funding opportunities within our local institutions. Anytime you're talking about money, you're also talking about developing the trust with anybody that's going to, you know, be generous with giving you any sort of donation. And so that's something too that we have is, you know, because, we have this really dedicated volunteer force that fiercely believe in the mission of preserving this history for the next generations. Our board, you know, they fiercely believe in that mission too. And they, you know, we're able to connect with different businesses, that historically have either been family friends or have, you know, been people like, oh yeah, you know, we had connections through the Swiss Club in Hultville, or we had connections here with the Cattle Call in Brawley. So we've been really privileged that we have those connections and we have that community trust that we've been able to receive funding in that way. We do have admissions. We do charge for admissions. So that generates some income for us. We have a gift shop it's a thrift shop model. So we, you know, have free donations. And so we don't have to worry about, you know, paying overhead for a separate space. So that does bring in some revenue for us. We have events, which bring in revenue, and we're hoping to continue to grow our events and build bigger events where we're able to bring in more funds. The other thing that we do to bring in money is grant writing. And that's something that we have been really, really fortunate that a couple of members of our board have kind of teamed up as a grant writing committee and have started shooting out applications. And I've learned a lot from them just in the past couple of weeks about, you know, where I'm starting the grant writing process for a couple of different grants, for digitization and things of that nature. But grant writing is something that's going to be super, super important for the health of our institution, especially as we're thinking long-term goals, like, you know, updating Heber College to be a performing arts center, you know, continuing to hire people. My archivist that, you know, they hired me, they hired a second person. So of course, like having a healthy, you know, financial, foundation so that I can continue to pay us and continue to grow our paid team. Mm-hmm. So we're going in, you know, with being able to, you know, maintain ourselves with these private donations of time, like, you know, the fact that I keep on saying this, Jose, but it's just incredible to me. I have never in my life seen so many dedicated volunteers like that they approach this like a full-time job. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and we have office place banter and I tease them about, oh, you're going to be volunteer of the month, or no, you're going to be volunteer of the month, or, you know, and it's, I think that can be taken for granted sometime is how valuable time of skilled volunteers is. And then of course, you know, the being privileged to have the network through my board of people that believe in this mission and that want to donate significant money to fund our Pioneers Day, to fund our Museum Day, to fund our holiday tour, which we do at the end of the year. Because ultimately, it's like, okay, you know, like we can put money into stuff, but we're a public asset. Like we're a public resource, you know, the public should use us and should come to us and take pride in the local history, but also in the area. Cause this is a beautiful place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And before we started recording, you were talking about, you know, the location, mm-hmm. How, you know, maybe you could go back to and I was feeling bad when you were talking about it. Cause it sounded really nice how you mentioned, you know, the fields and then the equipment out there. And then you have the backdrop of, you know, the mountains and.
Yeah. So no, I mean, so I come from Beaumont, Texas, right? Beaumont. And I studied French. So like Beaumont means beautiful mountain. There's a Beaumont, California. And they got mountains there. There is no mountains in Beaumont, Texas. We're at sea level, right? It's kind of similar here. So to me, you know, the mountains, like I was telling my husband, we were driving, you know, when we were driving from Brawley back into El Centro, I was like, do you see how you can see the snow on the mountains, right? Like you can see how you see how the sun's reflecting off the snow. So to me, yeah, no, the landscape is just different. At IVC across the street, they have like the world's most beautiful bus stop. Like, maybe that's a hyperbole, but like to me, like, no, like, you know, it's nice, you know, nice, renovation or refresh or, you know, architecturally it's interesting bus stop, but like just seeing just the open expanse, you know, the fact that like it's constantly like my breath is constantly taken away here just from the open expanse because I'm from the suburbs, you know, you don't have big wide open spaces. I lived in Houston for a little bit, urban, you know, concrete jungle, like very, very urban and very, constant construction, hot, you know, concrete, like, you know, jammed up everywhere, you know, the suburbs, like, you know, you have this development. So for me, the landscape here is just breathtaking and constantly, like, I'm just constantly amazed. And like, even, and just, you know, the agricultural culture, you know, like, it's funny to me because it's not that different than Southeast Texas where I'm from. Like, you know, like we have horses back there and we have a rodeo and a cattle call and a fair. And so it's fun because there's things that remind me of home, but then it's just this breathtaking landscape that like I've never encountered. I've encountered mountains in my life before, metaphorical and physical, but you know, just the fact that it's every day I open up my door and like, you know, a sunset, like the colors that we get here and the sunsets, you don't get that anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And that's just amazing to me.
Yeah, I think the sunsets for me is something that sometimes like I'll be coming out of a store or something and mm-hmm. I'm facing east and it's like, or west, yeah, west. And it's like, wow, that's beautiful. And I'll take a picture. Yeah. You know, I never do anything with the picture, but it's on my phone. And, you know, I was like, man, that's really nice. I don't think I've ever seen that before anywhere else. But yeah, and it's true. Like we get these really nice colors. Mm-hmm. And then especially when you see the, you know, Mount Signal or the mountains over there. And I get this, it's we take for granted the landscape here because, you know, it's just like, oh yeah, there's a field there, desert, and then mm-hmm.
And everybody's like, oh, what's great about living here is we're close to Yuma or we're close to Chicali or we're close to San Diego or we're, you know, 3 hours from Riverside. It's like, all right, all those places are great and cool or whatever, but like we're 20 minutes from Brawley. We're, you know, 20 minutes from Holtville. We're, you know, 10 minutes from, you know, El Centro or Calexico or whatever, right? And so to me, like, it's really exciting to be able to, you know, do a tour of the Imperial Valley and like hit all these different towns and get a little bit of a different taste. Like, you know, Brawley has a different feel than Holtville does. And Calexico has a very different feel than Imperial. So that's been fun as well. But what they have in common, right, is this shared culture, the agricultural, very strong ties to the land and very strong ties to the community.
Mm. Yeah. And I think it's something that lately I've been mentioning a lot that, you know, I might be from Calexico or you might be from El Centro, but at the end of the day, we're all from Imperial Valley. And, you know, but I've been telling telling people a lot where like you zoom out on Google Earth and like you see like this desert around us and like green fields.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, we're in the middle of nowhere and, you know, we live here and a lot of people know about the Imperial Valley because of, you know, what we produce, mm-hmm. you know, the people we feed.
Yeah.
And then, but we don't, a lot of the times we, I feel like we don't take pride in that, you know, we just might take pride in our city, but as a whole, you know, we are, you know, important in, you know, in other places, not only, you know, here in California.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, maybe nationally our reputation might be taken for granted a little bit because it's like, okay, we're growing all the greens, mm-hmm. you know, like during the wintertime, like I think they've had like three harvests of greens. And I think this might be the last of the winter harvest, mm-hmm. That's coming up. But, And I, you know, I would love us to have a better, you know, unifying identity as being the Imperial Valley. I go to class and my students are wearing like LA Dodger hats or like San Diego Padres. It's like, why can't we have them like in a Barbara Worth hat, you know, or maybe that's not cool. Holly Sugar hat might be cool or, you know, something like a Salvation Mountain, you know, like cool t-shirt that incorporates something from Salvation Mountain because like, it's just again, like the valley as a whole, like the Carrot Festival, like, that's cool. Like, you know, like the displays they have for the carrot festivals are crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, so I think there's ways that we're iconic and I think there's ways we can be creative by thinking about like ways we identify as Imperial Valleyans.
Mm-hmm. And I think coming here to the museum, and looking at the history can, you know, maybe encourage a little bit more, you know, people taking pride in, you know, where we came from and where we're at now.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think, you know, I encourage people to, I mean, it's my first time here, but I'm definitely going to come by and do a real tour, not just,
yeah, sure.
you know, here in the middle. But yeah, I really encourage people to swing by and, you know, stop by and see, you know, all these cool things, our history. Can you tell us a little bit about the, you know, the fees, your times?
Yeah. So we have different, ticketing rates for different categories. So like our general admission is $6. And then we do a veteran discount, senior citizen discount, $5. We have students over the age of 12, they're $3. And then ages 5 through 12, $2. And then, you know, like it's free for, you know, if you're under 5. So we have like a whole range of prices. But so it's, you know, it's pretty good. You know, it's not that bad, mm-hmm. Of an admissions to come. We have events throughout the year. Some of them are ticketed. And of course, like any of our ticketed events, the proceeds go, they're going to these really cool projects that we're starting to fund with digitization and QR codes and that kind of stuff. So we announce those on social media, in constant contact. We have an email list for people. And so we keep people informed, when we have ticketed events like that. Our Pioneers Day is coming up and that's free to come and walk around. And then of course, like, you know, we have different vendors that you can buy food or you can buy, we're going to pull pork sandwiches. Mm-hmm. We're going to have baked goods. Oh, there's going to be a bake shop that has pecan pies, the world's best pecan pies, from a gourmet cook. We're going to have, you know, a blacksmith come out. And so like there's a lot of demonstrations that are happening that day that are free. So we encourage the families to come check us out when we have those big free events.
When is Pioneers Day?
Pioneers Day is April 1st, Saturday, April 1st, 10 to 2. It's really fun on my end because this is going to be my first Pioneers Day. Like I'm planning it, but it's my first one. And like, you know, I got a phone call like, oh yeah, we're going to have gold panning. The gold panning guy, he confirmed. We're going to have leather tooling demonstrations. We have a blacksmith demonstration. We're working on, you know, maybe some field day activities for the kids. We're going to have like interior. So in this room that we're in, we actually set up some pioneer activities. So there's like coffee grinding. There's butter churning. They bring out these butter churns and let the kids crank them to, you know, eat some butter on a cracker. They do a little sewing circle demonstration. So there's some, women who are skilled sewers that come in and they help the kids make little sachets with, potpourri. we have a little quilting activity, and we're hoping to expand. Maybe in the past we haven't, well, and I say this, you know, as somebody that's new here, and of course we've been affected by COVID like everybody else. So like last year was our first Pioneer's Day back, and they weren't able to do the indoor activities at that time. So now we're coming back and we're increasing our offerings back to what we were pre-pandemic. So that's pretty exciting. And it's really, you know, like we have vendors and we'll be doing things to help us generate revenue during the event and to pay for the event, of course. But it's going to be a free event for people who, if you've never been to the museum, that's the time. Like, come and peek and get a look around and then come back to have more of an intimate time to explore the collections on your own.
Yeah, for sure. So we're almost at an hour. No, like 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Anything else that, you know, I didn't ask you that you might want to let the listeners know? Like I said, I want to come back and have another conversation just with you.
Because
I know, you know, just talking before the podcast and, you know, what you've been telling me about the museum, you're really passionate about what you do. And then, you know, I was doing some research on your Instagram and, you know, you have a lot of experience, especially like in the art world. You know, you look like somebody likes art.
Yeah. I'm wearing my horse shirt, but it's, you know, it's like an artful horse shirt.
Yeah.
On my end, I just really want to hone in on the mission of the museum, and that is to serve our community and for the community to embrace us as a resource. And whether, you know, like that community could be, you know, our locals who are seeking us to learn more about their roots. It could be, you know, trying to do genealogical research. You reach out to our archivists to, you know, figure out a little bit about your roots because you want to understand where you come from. You know, I'm so excited to be working with Imperial Valley College on figuring out ways we can bring students in for, you know, service learning opportunities, internships, work study type of opportunities. And so like holistically being a resource, whether it is, you know, a personal reason or professional reason why people want to come and visit us and access our collections. So, I think, you know, I made the reference earlier. I'm not an outsider. I'm a transplant. I was sent here. Me and my husband holistically believe that we were sent here, and I'm learning along the way. And part of what fuels me and part of my job is just every day is different. Every day I'm meeting somebody new and every day I'm learning something new. And I mean, if that's happening to me on the job, just imagine being a visitor coming in here and spending 30 minutes, the type of transformative experience you can have visiting our collections.
Yeah. And you know, you mentioned, using this as a, you know, if you're looking for, you know, your genealogical, you know, history. I mean, there's a lot of people that, you know, their families have street names that have been here, you know, their founders, that's, you know, their great grandkids still live here. So, you know, I can imagine being a great grandkid of somebody that's might have an artifact here or pictures from, you know, when they first started. So, you know, I think it's a, you know, coming from a small community, county that, like you mentioned, you know, there's a lot of, you know, people that are still here from, you know, a long time ago. This is a good, you know, good resource to come and find a little bit about more your family and your roots and stuff like that.
That and then just taking pride in this area, taking pride and living here. Like, okay, yeah, cool. I got to live in Paris for a year, but you know, when I lived there, like I was an outsider and you know, I wasn't accepted here. Like everybody's accepting me. Like I'm having a great time. And then like once you take pride in being where you're from, that's how you get, you know, like I love my volunteers. I need my volunteers. And I appreciate them, but I want to continue to grow my volunteer force. And continue to get young people in here. You know, we could have a museum TikTok. I don't have time for that, but you know, hey, Ivy Irony, you know, he's out there on Instagram. You know, hey, come through. Like, let me get you like a communications internship, friend. Like, you know, and like taking, you know, like and empowering our youth, keeping our youth here. Like, okay, I know you go out to San Diego or you go to Cal Poly or you go wherever for college, but come back and bring that knowledge, bring those skills and build something here. So many, you know, like I got to live in a big city at different points in my life. I lived in the suburbs and small cities, different points in my life. And home is where you make it. You know, you can complain about the small town all you want, like, oh, nothing to do here. But it's like, all right, if there's nothing to do, then you make it. Like, and if you build it, they will come, right? Like, so I'm really, I'm inspired by the potential. I'm inspired by thing, you know, people that are already around me, people that are moving and shaking and doing things at the museum that have been doing it for decades. But I'm also inspired by the potential of bringing in the youth, bringing in the children, bringing in these young Gen Zers that have these fresh ideas and that are doing really cool, fun things that can benefit the museum and can benefit our mission and what we're trying to do and serve as a resource for the people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, speaking of, you know, I'm 40 and you're 30, and you know, I think that, you know, I would say you're young because I'm already 40. But, you know, having a young director can really, you know, benefit the museum, you know, especially like social media. I mean, Instagram, you know, I think Instagram is right now, besides TikTok. Mm-hmm. I have no idea how to use TikTok. But I think I'm a little bit more comfortable with Instagram. Mm-hmm. And I think it's what the Imperial Valley is a little bit more comfortable with. Because we're always a little bit late when it comes to like the social media or technology or just in general, like we're like a generation of whatever, like whether it's clothes, whether it's technology, whether it's, we're like a generation behind. But yeah, Instagram is something that we're a little bit more comfortable with. And I think that's, me and you got in touch. So I think that, you know, you having those skills, learning, you know, knowing technology is going to help the museum a lot too.
Well, you know, honestly, they already had a social media strategy in place and they have a captive audience. I want to say we have like 3,000 followers on Facebook. And you know, maybe I'm exaggerating. Sorry, math isn't math. And maybe it's somewhere between 1,000 to 3,000 followers on Facebook. And that's not nothing. And then on Instagram, we have 300 followers, but we have been really lucky that a couple of our board members had the foresight that, look, we need to start a digital strategy. So I came into this position and there was already a digital strategy in place that I just, you know, I came in and my copywriting skills and my experiences, I was able to kind of marry that with what my board members were already doing here. And I'm hoping to, you know, like Instagram, once I'm a little bit more settled and hopefully I'm bringing in a workforce, right? I want to bring in a volunteer force, maybe some communication interns, communication fellows, like whatever you want to call the position. Come in and help me with my social media and let's build it. Let's have fun with it. Yeah, you know, like let's have, you know, like I want to put this on my social media, you know, and continue to build it.
Yeah. And you know, a lot of, you know, maybe students from IVC or even high school students that are really good with, you know, the, with social media. I mean, having, you know, that on your background, like, you know, I was a volunteer and I was in charge of, was somewhat in charge of the social media for a museum is a huge thing to have on your resume. So
absolutely. And then like having the formal title and building your portfolio and then, you know, having somebody like me, you know, like in your back pocket, like, hey, use me as a reference because I can attest to those skills and professionalization, you know, like I mentioned Ivy Irony earlier. It's this high school. I don't even know who he is. All right.
And he's heard of him.
Oh, I'll have to show you. He's not going to listen to this. Right. He's a high schooler. He went to the Beauty and the Beast play at Southwest High School yesterday and you know, has little memes and like different things about the Valley and it's fun. But you know, like, all right, you know, what can I do for this kid? Like to give him the professionalization, you know, let's come up with some social media guidelines. Let's come up with some like column pitches. Let's come up with, you know, he does a meme Monday. Like, okay, how can we do a meme Monday for the museum? How can we do a archival behind the scenes Tuesday and things like that? So, just like, you know, working with people in their current skill sets, but also giving them a little bit of a professionalization. Mm-hmm. Like, all right, so you have the drive, you have the interest in doing a meme Monday. How can we tailor it to our audience? How can we tailor the voice to fit the audience that we're reaching on our current networks? You know, how can we use hashtags and things like that?
And even, you know, say locally, like say you graduate from high school and you're going to IVC, mm-hmm. and people here locally, like a business sees mm-hmm. you in charge of the social media for the museum, they might reach out and say, hey, you want to, I'll pay you, you know, something on the side if you want to help me with my social media for my business, you know, even if you're not going away, you know, to mm-hmm. study communications, like being here and having that on your background is huge. And, you know, like you said, you yourself is your resource mm-hmm. for, you know, for that kind of stuff.
So. Yeah. And it's one of those things that, a lot of times, you have to build your skill set. And I think when I was younger, I felt like things were going to be given to me, like, okay, I'm going to get my degree and then that should get me this automatically. And that's not how the world works. Yeah. You know, you have to be hungry for it and you have to build it yourself. And so that's what I did for my, to be prepared to handle a job like this. And I remember, you know, doing journalism and being told, very clearly, like, you know, in 2014, like social media is not going anywhere. Computers are not going anywhere. You know, podcasts aren't going anywhere. Like, you know, you need to keep up with where the world's at. And you know, at the time there weren't formal classes about social media. It was just kind of learning, you know, on the fly, on the go. So I think that's something, you know, and especially here, when I mentioned earlier about, you know, small time, I see nothing but potential. There's nothing but potential here. And you know, whether, you know, students use us as a resource and then they go off somewhere else, or those talents go back into the valley. You know, I'm hoping to help others build things here.
Yeah. Well, thank you again for your time. I had a lot of fun talking to you. Hopefully we can do it again. And hopefully have a chance to talk to your husband as well.
Yeah, for sure.
I want to invite everybody to stop by the museum. April 1st is Pioneer's Day. Sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. Thank you guys for listening or watching, and we'll see you guys in the next one.
Thank you, Jose.
Peace. Bye.